From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A million tax dollars for the Tiger Woods Foundation, another million and a half to preserve the papers of retiring Missouri Congressman Richard Gephardt at the B.B. King Museum in Indianola, Mississippi. They're singing more than the blues with their million-dollar slice of pork barrel spending. There's something for everyone and their grandmother, it seems, in the $388 billion omnibus spending bill coming out of Congress. Along with money allocated for bridge repairs and new sidewalks, the 3,000-page bill has enough pork in it to stretch from Maine to Hawaii. Lawmakers got their 14-inch thick copies of the bill just hours before they voted on it. Most couldn't tell you what's in it. The process is broken, summed up Republican Senator John McCain. But Republicans are in charge. Tonight on Point, pork barrel spending in an era of mega deficits. You can join the conversation with the federal debt mounting. Why is federal pork barrel spending still going strong? Why isn't the Republican majority hitting the brakes? Or as long as the new zoo is built in your town, are you happy to see the pork fly? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Gail Shattuck. She covers Congress for the Christian Science Monitor. Gail, you've been looking at this, and we're going to get way into it tonight. Thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
So, first of all, I guess it goes back to the genesis of all this spending, or the bill that it's packaged in, Gail, this omnibus bill. We'll look at a lot of the details tonight, but it's the process by which this came to be in the first place that has a lot of people on Capitol Hill shaking their heads over the last week, even though most of them have voted for it. What's got people so upset about the way this came to be?
It's, I think, the fact that a bill of this size, no one in Washington actually knows what's in it. It was pulled together so quickly that members only had a few hours to even glance at it. And in that process, they discovered and are continuing to discover features they didn't know existed. One of them was so egregious that it actually brought the whole process to a halt. An aide to Senator Kent Conrad discovered that there was a paragraph in the middle of this monstrous bill that basically said that the chairman of the Appropriations Committee for the House and the Senate, or any of their agents, could go into any IRS office and release information about any taxpayer's files without criminal or civil penalties. Astonishing. And when he questioned people about it, no one actually knew why it was there.
So this was, to get it all out there, this is the bill that will fund the federal government for the next year, through next September. It was supposed to go through, a week or 10 days ago. If it hadn't been for this hitch about access to individual American citizens' IRS reports, it would already have been through, and before anyone really knew comprehensively what was in it.
It's the odd thing, you know, with omnibuses in years past, they're voted and then they're gone. This week has actually given activists, citizens groups a chance to spend some more time on it and actually try to figure out what's in it. Now, you'll see not just more information about these member projects, or the pork you talked about at the opening of the program, but also some riders that change lives of Americans, sometimes in very significant ways. They're harder to find than the pork barrel projects, which tend to be listed and pretty obvious. They can be just a change of a phrase in something no one's paying attention to, and that's what groups are looking at closely in this week as well.
We're going to look at that at the spending pattern, but why is it that everything's being wrapped into these giant last-minute bills or this kind of omnibus bill that just gets shoved through Congress with little or no deliberation, even awareness of what's in there? What's the dynamic on Capitol Hill that it's encouraging that kind of bizarre legislation, Gil?
They do it because they can. I mean, you might remember President Reagan's State of the Union address in 1988, where he brought up to the podium this huge omnibus bill, more than 1,000 pages, and he thumped it down on the podium, injuring his hand in the process, and said, "This will never happen again. I will not sign such a bill." Now, eight of them have gone through Congress since Republicans controlled the House in 95. Yeah, I think they do it because they can, because it's a much quicker way to to deal with these issues. Instead of debates and hearings, you just put a few people in a small room, write up the bill, take it back to the floor with no amendment, no debate, and an up-and-down vote, which late in the process, when Social Security checks might not go out in the mail, is very difficult to say no to.
So there's no deliberation and almost no oversight here. Is there something for everyone in these bills? Are Republicans keeping the gravy for their own districts and their own states, or are Democrats, fully on board the pork barrel train as well?
I think you'll find something in this bill for every congressional district in the country. I'd be surprised if you didn't. Looking through, for example, there's a lot in there for South Dakota, which has, Democratic lawmakers. So this is something that cuts across party lines. It's interesting, too, I'll get in my fax the same day a message from a member of Congress who's outraged at pork, and then something he's sending to his district saying, claiming credit for the projects he's brought. So it certainly does cut both ways.
Oh, absolutely. I'm looking here at a press release from the office of U.S. Senator Kit Bond from Missouri. And it's just page after page of kind of bragging rights about all the stuff he's bringing home. And when you look at these one by one, many of them look like very nice things. A new visitor center here, some soybean research there, some genomics research there, or a new Boys and Girls Club. Individually, Gail, many of these don't sound like $1,000 hammers or gold-plated toilet seats. Remember all the Proxmire stuff. Yet we're talking here about an environment where the country is very, very deeply in deficit, and none of this spending is covered.
When you ask yourself, is it something you want your grandchildren paying for? It puts all of them in a different frame. And I think the other thing that's important to remember about these earmarks is that they are not the object of any competitive process, so that the sidewalk in Boca Raton that needs fixing may well need fixing, but there may be some in Harlem that needed a whole lot more. And why are tax dollars going to Boca Raton and not to Harlem?
So no one's weighing which does the country need more urgently.
Exactly. If this had gone through a regular process where a subcommittee sits down, goes over the competing proposals, takes votes, makes decisions, holds hearings, has debates, it's a more open process. But when it just gets slipped in at the last minute without even an agency request, that's what's problematic about the earmark.
Now, Gail, you do point out, on the other hand, that this omnibus bill is, in overall spending, is the leanest non-defense spending bill in nearly a decade. What do you mean by that?
This is only the second time since Republicans took over that there has been an actual decline in domestic spending. Now, that is a point that has been lost in all of the discussion about this, but I think it's very important because the Republican Congress in the 109th Congress, in my view, is going to be much more restrictive on domestic spending.
That's
than the
next,
last one.
The next Congress, we're the 108th now,
Congress.
Of course. But you're looking here at the Department of Housing and Urban Development, a big hit, almost $400 million hit. The Environmental Protection Agency, almost a $300 million hit. So they have cut ongoing programs, but not the pork.
That's right. This is just the beginning of the domestic cuts you're going to be seeing.
Gail Shattuck, I'm so glad you're with us tonight. I want to keep you on board if you'd be good enough to stay.
Glad to.
Great. And invite in a couple more voices here. First, also joining us from Washington is David Williams. He's Vice President of Policy at Citizens Against Government Waste. It's a nonprofit, nonpartisan watchdog group. They put out the annual Congressional Pig book. Nothing too nuanced there. It's a detailed analysis of Congress's appropriations. David Williams, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And our own news analyst, Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly, is with us tonight. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom. Hello to our guests.
David Williams, I wish you'd take us right into some of this detail. Gail has set the frame for us, but you guys are the ones who outline the pork line by line. Give us a sense of the kind of spending that's going on that may raise our listeners' eyebrows.
Well, let's talk about one program in particular, the Economic Development Initiative Program. And this is funded through the Department of Housing and Urban Development. This program was intended to help the poorer sections of the country. One of the earmarks is going to Coral Gables, Florida, $500,000 for the Biltmore Hotel. I was on the website of the Biltmore Hotel, and it just so happened that they were offering a Thanksgiving dinner on Thanksgiving, not for not for the poor, but it was a $95 per person dinner with a champagne toast.
And Coral Gables, no mean streets there. The Biltmore Hotel, kind of an icon of luxury. What is this, for some kind of rehabilitation or historic preservation?
This is for restoration of the actual hotel.
And yet they're charging $90 for a Thanksgiving meal, and that $500,000 is going to be paid when and by whom?
It's going to be paid within the year, and it's going to be paid by federal taxpayers, taxpayers across the country that may never see the benefit of the new restoration, may never visit the Biltmore Hotel. A lot of people can't afford to visit the Biltmore Hotel.
Or for that matter, I guess, get rolled into that enormous deficit that the country rolls forward every year. Give us some other examples. Pepper us with them, David.
We have in this country a Hall of Fame complex where we need to fund various halls of fame. The Baseball Hall of Fame, $450,000. We have the Country Music Hall of Fame, $250,000. Now, these are national halls of fame. There are also local halls of fame. In Alabama, we're going to be spending $25,000 for the Alabama Sports Hall of Fame and $75,000 for the Syracuse Sports Hall of Fame. Now, you look at these examples and you wonder, why are federal taxpayers paying for a Syracuse Sports Hall of Fame? The answer is very simple. Jim Walsh, who is Representative Jim Walsh from New York, who represents Syracuse, is the subcommittee chairman of appropriations on that particular committee. So he's able to secure this funding, really, with very little resistance from other members, because the other members have to come to him for their projects.
So it's power politics. Now, when we look down the list of things being done, here's the $1 million for the Missouri Pork Producers Federation to see if hog waste can be used as a source of energy. On the one hand, it sounds absurd. On the other hand, if that's a real energy source, I don't know, maybe there's the alternative to oil. You go right on down. There's lots of bridges, roads, sidewalks in here, highway improvements, parks and sewer construction, hospitals. I mean, not all of these things sound absurd. They've got a kind of public interest element to them, many of them, David Williams. How do you define what's pork and what's a proper federal spending?
You are absolutely correct. A lot of these sound meritorious, that they should be funded. But what we do is we look at the process. Right now, the process is in such chaos that you have a 3,000-page bill, or however big this monstrosity
is. Yeah,
3,000-plus. You have members of Congress at the very last minute adding projects. They don't have to submit any sort of needs requirement. There's no competitive process. The only competition are members of Congress scrambling to the appropriators trying to get their projects and the particular bill. We look at the process. We don't go through this and look for silly-sounding projects. That's not how we determine what pork is.
Mm-hmm.
We have a 7-point criteria, and it really looks at the checks and balances. Did this project go through the proper scrutiny? We're not against federal spending. We're against wasteful federal spending. And right now, we, as you mentioned earlier, there's a $400 billion deficit. The debt is $7.4 trillion. Mm. We can't afford to have a process that's in such disrepair and chaos. And, you know, our plea is very simple, is to take power away from these appropriators. They have proven that they cannot be trusted.
But they're the representatives of the people. Jack Beatty, join us here for a minute. Here we've got money going out the window like crazy when there's a huge deficit. On the other hand, these are the elected representatives of Americans.
Yes, you suppose if I went down to that Biltmore Hotel and I said, you know, I paid for this chandelier, I want a free breakfast, you think they'd cough over?
Somehow I don't.
Right.
But if you did it, they would, Jack.
Okay, you're so charming. I hate to sound like a troglodyte, but the fact is, this is one of the ways that representative government works. I mean, people in these districts want many or some or most of these things, and it makes government spending, petrified taxes, legible. You know, if there were none of this, if Mr. Williams were the czar, what would we have? Probably a tax revolt. People would say, I'm not getting anything for my money.
Well, we'll come back and look at exactly who's getting what with all that money, with all that pork. Jack Beatty, Gail Shattuck, David Williams, please stand by. We're talking about pork barrel spending in an era of mega deficits. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. This is... I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the $388 billion omnibus spending bill rolling through Congress right now. It is replete with pork barrel spending in an era of mega deficits. You can join our conversation tonight with federal debt higher than ever. Why is federal pork barrel spending still so high? Why are we putting an Iowa rainforest in, putting money into the Tiger Woods Foundation, a facelift for the Biltmore Hotel? Why is all that going on the groaning national credit card? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Earlier today, I spoke with California Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi, Democratic leader in the House of Representatives and senior member of the House Appropriations Committee. I asked her how she explains the amount of pork barrel spending in this bill.
Well, the amount of pork barrel spending shouldn't be there, but more importantly, it shouldn't be based on a budget that has these excessive tax cuts for the people making over $1 million a year, which contribute enormously to the deficit. So taken together, we're driving the American people and our children deeply into debt. It simply isn't a way to govern.
So you're saying it's the tax cuts that are the problem, not the spending?
Both of them. But the tax cut is the huger part of the deficit. And when you look at how we have nearly a $500 billion deficit this year alone, we had zero deficit in 1999 when President Clinton was president. You see the difference in spending priorities and budget priorities.
And yet there's the tax cut or the tax cuts, and there are the deficits, and still Congress has gone ahead and passed this, 344-51. That means a lot of Democrats were supporting this omnibus bill as well, and all these details about pork barrel spending come out. How does that leave you feeling?
Well, first of all, you have to know that these bills, some of them never saw the light of day. Seven of the nine bills contained in this omnibus bill never went to the floor of the United States Senate. So they never even saw them at one first glance. So to add insult to injury, though, they clumped nine bills together and brought them to the floor, waiving the three-day rule that says you must have 3 days for members to read the bill. Myself, I'd throw all the pork barrel stuff out and just have a clean bill and that reflects the need of Congress to do the business of the country so that our business can be conducted. That isn't what the status quo is. But again, the problem here is that on Saturday morning, Congress received a bill that was brought to the floor after it came out of the Rules Committee on Friday night late, with no opportunity to read the bill. It contained hundreds of billions of dollars in spending, again, without time to read the bill.
You call it a miserable budget full of misplaced priorities.
That's right.
And yet, what is the nature of the conversation on Capitol Hill these days that lets that deficit grow and the pork barrel spending go ahead anyway? Is this just seen as the price of American politics today? It has to be spent, even if it's on the next generation's credit card, in effect?
Well, make sure you understand that as objectionable as the pork barrel spending is, it is nothing, a small percentage of the deficit compared to what the tax cuts at the high end have done to grow the deficit. The Congressional Budget Office, which is a nonpartisan office of the Congress, has said that the tax cuts have contributed the most to the deficit. But again, about this omnibus bill, It is objectionable in many respects. First of all, it's loaded with fat. Second of all, it is a bill that members didn't even see before they could vote on it. Third of all, it contained a taxpayer persecution provision, which enabled members of Congress to see the tax returns of taxpayers without any safeguards or penalties for making any of that information public. The list goes on and on about the abuses in the bill. If a bill were subjected to the public scrutiny, if this bill went on the Internet 3 days in advance of Congress having to vote on it and members could have access to that information as well, I think you would see a much more responsible piece of legislation.
Nancy Pelosi, let me ask you just a last question here. You know, there was this idea among certain Republican circles of the starve-the-beast approach to government. That is, make the tax cuts, and then the spending won't be possible because the money won't be there. But it looks, in this case, as though the tax cuts have been made, but the spending goes ahead anyway. What's up with that?
Well, you know, the Republicans always accuse the Democrats of tax and spend, but what all they do is borrow and spend, driving us deeply into debt. Democrats like tax cuts. We want them to be for the middle class, where they will grow the economy and create jobs, and not to the high end, which does not produce the result. So what you have is total irresponsibility on the part of the Republicans in Congress in advancing a bill. No wonder they have to hide it in the dark of night. No wonder they have to waive the three-day rule, because when subjected to public scrutiny, certainly it does not stand up to the light of day.
Nancy Pelosi, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
California Congresswoman and Democratic Leader of the House, Nancy Pelosi. She spoke with me earlier from San Francisco. We're also joined tonight by Christian Science Monitor's Congressional Reporter Gail Shattuck, David Williams, Vice President of Policy at Citizens Against Government Waste, and our own Jack Beatty. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Gail Shattuck, I was fascinated by that. Nancy Pelosi says, yes, the pork is bad, but it's really the tax cuts. The vote in the House was 344-51. That means a lot of Democrats voted for this bill.
24 Democrats voted against it. It's interesting.
Is that more amazing to you, being front row?
More interesting. You know how many Republicans voted against it?
No, I don't.
27 in the House. In the Senate, 6 Republicans voted against it and 23 Democrats. I think those are very interesting numbers, especially on the Republican side.
Now, you have to explain that to us. You know, we invited a list of Republicans as long as your arm to come on. None of them want to talk about this bill because they've got majorities in both houses.
I can't imagine why.
but why are those numbers interesting to you? Do we see a civil war in the Republican Party over the spending yet, or not really?
You're going to see it in the 109th Congress. Think back to what it was that brought Republicans to power in the House after 42 years of being in the wilderness. It was cut the deficits, shrink the size of government, small government, and a notion of federalism. The federal government should do what it does well and let the states and localities do what they ought to do, such as education, sidewalks, and everything else. Hmm. Now that, as Republicans got used to power, that whole governing philosophy evaporated. But it is still there. If you look back at the Medicare, very interesting debate. There were 71 Republicans that signed a letter saying this isn't a time with deficits the size that we have to increase a Medicare entitlement. Therefore, don't do it. In the end, only 25 voted against it. But those 25 and the 71, enhanced by new members, especially on the Senate side, are coming back this year with something they didn't have before, a president that they don't have to protect. This is a lame duck president, a lame duck vice president, and these members are now saying there's no reason to hold back at this point. We've got a Republican who's going to be sending appointments to the Supreme Court. We're going to go back to our fiscal conservative roots, and I think you're going to see a colossal fight within the Republican Party on exactly this point.
Well, that would be quite a U-turn at this point. Now, as you pointed out, Gail, there are some major cuts to big programs, but the pork barrel seems to go on. And David Williams, I wish you'd reel off some more of these examples so that our listeners who haven't been able to read your full, really kind of amazing report can have a richer sense of the variety of things that are being funded here.
$250,000 for city pool renovation and construction in California, banning California. $250,000 to construct the Great Falls parking garage in Auburn, Maine. In Markham, Illinois, $300,000 for streetlights and a salt dome. I don't know what the salt dome is in particular, but it's going to get $300,000. $150,000 for the Grammy Foundation. This is the same Grammy Foundation in California that gives their awards away every year. And, you know, if you look at this compared to Tiger Woods, these are entities with a lot of money.
The Grammys don't seem to have any shortage of bling-bling, of diamonds and glitter.
Absolutely. $250,000 for the North Creek Ski Bowl in North Creek, New York. And when you look at pork barrel spending, it's not divided evenly. Meaning that the states of Alaska, West Virginia, Mississippi, Alabama receive a disproportionate share of pork barrel spending, mainly because they're represented by a Senate appropriator.
And what's the reason for that? Because they've got more power in their congressperson?
They have more power in their congressperson, and they're sitting on the right committee. So they're at the front of the line waiting to tap the ATM known as the Federal Treasury.
And so on it comes. I want to get some perspective on this now from Paul Craig Roberts. He served as Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Economic Policy in the first Reagan administration, worked for Jack Kemp, wrote the Kemp-Roth bill. He's a regular contributor to the American Conservative. Paul Craig Roberts, thanks for being with us tonight.
Good evening.
So here's a Republican-dominated Congress, front to back, and yet the pork keeps coming. What's wrong with this picture? Why is this happening?
Well, you see, that's what they get elected to do. The way it works today is a city or a municipality or a museum or whatever will hire a lobbying firm. Lobbying firm will often consist of past members of Congress.
Mm.
And then the lobbying firm will take the money it's hired with, and it will then trade campaign contributions to members of Congress for earmarked funds for their client. And so that explains why we have this list that Dave Williams was reading, 105 items of the most amazing kind.
A pretty straight swap. But we thought that conservatives were supposed to be fiscal conservatives. Certainly that's what the Republicans made a lot of noise about in the 90s, but it ended up being Democrat congresspeople or Democrat presidency that got the budget balanced. And now we've got 4 years plus of George Bush, and now Republicans dominating both houses of Congress. And it's so deep in the red. Do you feel, writing from the conservative side, tension building in your camp over what's going on here?
Well, the Republicans have become Democrats. You know, Republicans are also supposed to stay home and mind their own business and not start wars all over the world. It's very hard to characterize the current Republicans as Republicans. I'm not quite sure what they are.
But they're in power. Gail Shattuck says in this next Congress, we may see a real battle over this within the Republican Party. Do you anticipate that? Or is the pressure to bring home the bacon and the power to do it so alluring that Republicans will stay at it?
Yes, I think the pressure is very strong. And I think also there's a tremendous amount of delusion. There's all this delusion about they're a superpower and they can do anything and there are no costs to be paid. So I don't think we'll see much restraint until it all hits the fan. You see, the real constraint is the dollar. If it loses its role as the reserve currency, they will no longer be able to pump out all this debt. And we could be close at hand for some major problem with the dollar.
It's certainly been very wobbly lately. Paul Craig Roberts, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Paul Craig Roberts joined us from Panama City, Florida, former Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under Ronald Reagan. You can join our conversation tonight. Where is the conservatism here? Where is the fiscal restraint, the sense of fiscal reality? Or as long as the new zoo is in your town, are you happy to see the pork fly? We're at 1-800-423-8255. George is calling from Brooklyn, Wisconsin. Hi, George. You're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
You stole my line. A Republican congressman from the state of Wisconsin about 3 or 4 years ago commented that if there was pork in the budget, he brought home the bacon.
So sort of boasting about it.
Yeah. But I would just like to comment that I, as a citizen, expect my congressman to plead the case for what is important to me and for his constituents or her constituents,
mm-hmm.
And that the Senate should look at it as being wiser, less rash, more wisdom, and they must first ask themselves, is it in the best interest of the nation? And secondly, does it do no harm to my constituents from my state at large?
And what about the president's role in all this, George? President Bush hasn't vetoed a single bill since he came to Washington. Should he be threatening a veto of a big bill like this?
Well, he should be, but he won't. Part of the Republican agenda is to decimate the national debt in such a manner that social spending is shifted back to the states. And I think it is a wrong point. The government, the federal government, should give guidance and leadership and give guidelines and give parameters around which the states should work. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that every child deserves a quality education.
Whether that new Hall of Fame needs to go in or not. George, thanks very much for your call. David Williams, do you see a distinction today between the House and the Senate? Again, we see John McCain saying, we've reached the bizarre point where we approve hundreds of billions of dollars of bills without anyone seeing them. But is the Senate playing any breaking role here at all?
Well, George brought up an interesting point about the Senate, and I'd like to take it a little bit further. And instead of having the Senate elected by popular vote, we should go back and have senators appointed, because now senators have the same motivation that members of the House do, and that is to secure enough projects to try to curry favor back home to get reelected. So, you know, there are a couple of, I guess, significant points here. A, the Senate being voted in by popular vote, and also when they broke out the 13 appropriations bills. It really opened the floodgates for this kind of problem.
Jack Beatty, it sounds as though there's nobody really barring the gate here, but back to your point, you were saying, well, they're elected to bring home the bacon, and they are still. There's that deficit, Jack.
Yeah, but, you know, David just made, I think, an interesting admission. I mean, you scratch a goo-goo, and you often find an anti-Democrat. He's talking about, I don't know with what degree of seriousness, about, well, in order to insulate the Senate from the people, have the Senate appointed. Whoa, wait a minute.
How about that democracy thing?
Yeah, we got this little thing called elections and democracy, and part of the price of that is that George up in his district wants to get those, you know, that ice fishing arena built. And up here in New Hampshire, we want our, you know, I want my little museum down here to get its grants so we can honor America's railroads. And you know, that in a way, that's what makes the government worthwhile for people. I mean, they're getting something out of it. Now, there's only one man, as you pointed out, Tom, who represents all of the people, and that's George Bush. And if this stuff really mattered to him, he could say, I want all of this out and give me the bill, and they would have to, well, let's see what would happen.
Well,
apparently it doesn't matter all that much to him.
Well, something's going to have to give here eventually. As Paul Craig Roberts says, the dollar itself may go, and then the whole game comes to an end. Jack Beatty, David Williams, Gail Chadwick, stand by. We're talking tonight about pork barrel spending in an era of mega deficits. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about pork barrel spending in an era of mega deficits, about the vast pork in the omnibus spending bill coming out of the Republican-dominated Congress. You can join the conversation tonight. Why has the appropriations process become so secretive, so last minute, so dark of night? And what happened to the Republican deficit hawks of the 1990s? Is pork just what it takes to get reelected? Do you vote for the rep who brings home the bacon? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. We're joined by Gail Shattuck tonight, Christian Science Monitor's correspondent on Capitol Hill, by David Williams, Vice President of Policy at Citizens Against Government Waste, and by our own Jack Beatty. And right now from La Crosse, Wisconsin, by Joe. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Good evening. It's great to talk to you guys.
Great to have you. What's on your mind?
Thank you. As I listened to this, particularly as I listened to Nancy Pelosi, all I could think of was she kept saying, well, you know, it's the tax cut, it's the tax cut, it's the tax cut. My goodness, let's not take any personal responsibility for what happens around here at all. Let's just blame something else that we have not a lot of control over, except that they have control over that as well as spending. And frankly, we're just not seeing any results. as I recall, it was Reagan who cut taxes and held spending down, and actually revenues went up after that tax cut, and I know that this one was a little bit different.
But deficits went bazooie as well. I mean, they got enormous then.
They did, and as a result of it, what you saw was that by the time Clinton came into office, the deficits had disappeared. Once again, it was a perfectly reasonable long-term strategy, which this, I should point out, is not. The other thing that Reagan did was he held spending down. He didn't cut spending. That was actually a mislabeling, if you will. But he held spending down more than anybody else had. And one of the things Reagan was opposed was to pork barrel. What would happen if the budget didn't get signed? What would happen if some of our congressmen and some of our senators stood up and said, we're not going to vote for this bill. We haven't read it. We haven't seen it. This isn't 75 years ago when you had to mail a copy to somebody. We have the internet. We don't have the capability to have this bill ready. This bill wasn't ready because we don't want it to be ready. We want it to be passed in the dark of the night. We want it to be something we don't have time to read. So we can say, well, we've got to keep the government running.
Right.
We've got to keep this going.
A lot of intentionality here. No question about that, Joe. Thanks for your call. David Williams, what about this comparison of what's going on now in the Bush years and the Reagan years? You followed this for a while at your organization. How would you compare the two presidencies?
Well, we have a massive federal budget. We have a $2 trillion federal budget. So we have so much more money to spend right now. And that's why this process is so out of control, is that there's so much money to spend, and Congress never finishes the job on time. They're supposed to have a budget in place by September 30th.
But it was still a lot of money in the 1980s. It was hardly any thimbleful. Gail Chadwick, there's a different process now with the omnibus that's come. What about Ronald Reagan as a president and his involvement in pressuring or against pork barrel spending? Was it different?
Well, I think it's interesting that after that slamming down the omnibus in 1988, the very next year, all of the bills were done by October 1st, which is the technical deadline. All that means is that there is a process, that there are hearings, there are votes in subcommittee, votes in committee, votes on the floor, so that people have a chance to raise these issues. The amount of pork barrel spending, which was considerably less at that period, I think something like 8,000 pork projects compared to about 12,000 going on right now. But I honestly think it's not so much the pork, which, you know, even this year at $25 billion, is a small part of a
$380-some billion budget.
It's actually 821 discretionary budget, not counting all the defense supplementals. But it's we really need to focus on the larger question of how the federal government spends its money. Anything that is labeled defense or homeland security goes through quickly. It's the domestic non-defense expenditures that are really under scrutiny right now and are being will be starved just for demographic reasons. You know, we're heading into a kind of perfect fiscal storm, not just the dollar that Paul Craig Roberts talked about, but also the retirement of the baby boomers coming on us very quickly. All of the numbers, deficit numbers, mandatory spending numbers, go berserk at that point. And that's where the very difficult questions are going to have to be grappled. The sooner that Congress does it, the better. And I think you're going to see the beginning of that with a debate on Social Security this year. But right now, we have a process that is effectively broken for spending, and it has got to be fixed very quickly to even begin to deal with the seriousness of the challenges we're facing.
Jack, it's interesting what's emerging here. There's the kind of starve the beast mentality out there, saying cut the taxes so the government doesn't have that much money. But what I hear emerging in this conversation is that it's not the pork barrel spending that will get cut. It's big social programs that get cut, but the pork barrel may roll right on.
That's the trouble with getting too indignant about these things, that it comes back against vulnerable people. It becomes government spending, and the Biltmore Hotel in Coral Gables furnishes the indignation whereby some poor fellow gets his pension or his Social Security cut. But, you know, Ronald Reagan came in, he commissioned something called the Grace Commission under Mr. W.R. Grace, the chemical manufacturer. And if you go back and look at that commission there, there was a map for really how to cut this federal budget. And, of course, what happened? I mean, it talked about things like the Export-Import Bank, which is a multi-billion-dollar scandal. Talked about congressional pensions, huge scandal, on and on. But that is like a bomb. If you were to try to introduce any of that in Congress, you would have a revolt on your hands, as Reagan soon discovered. Carter came in. He said, I want to cut these water projects. That was his first bill. And the Congress said, you cut these water projects, and you will not have anything done here. And that was the party of his own. That was his own party. So it's not easy to do this, not unless the public gets behind it.
So everybody at sort of sword points here. Lynette's calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Lynette. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm happy I could get in. I am so happy that this topic is being discussed. I happen to hear the tail end of the discussion where the Senate got to the point where Senator Conrad brought forth the topic of the invasion of privacy as it relates to tax returns.
This is Kent Conrad's North Dakota, ranking Democrat on the Budget Committee.
I was so proud of how he handled it, but it did get very heated, and unfortunately, the senator from Alaska got defensive.
This is over the ability to look in on private citizens' tax returns.
Yes, but if it hadn't been for that, we wouldn't be able to have this conversation now. The bill would have gone through without us knowing all the ugly parts put in it.
That is the only reason. You're exactly right. But how, even now, after all this conversation, it's still essentially going through, Lynette. What can be done about it?
Well, my question is, what can we as citizens do, whether we are Democrats, Republicans, or independents? What can we do to stop this from going forth?
Oh, let us pick it straight up. Lynette, thanks very much for your call. David Williams, you must have a card that you hand out with the point-by-point instructions on it. What's your answer to the citizen?
Well, just to follow up with what Jack said, we are the official follow-on group to the Grace Commission. So we monitor the Grace Commission's recommendations. We've been around for 20 years after the Grace Commission was released. And the first thing that we ask people to do is vote. I know it sounds simple, but you need to be an informed voter. And don't sell your vote to the highest bidder. Don't vote people back in because you're bringing, 12 or 15 projects back to the district, because guess what? You're paying for 11,000 other projects. You're not only getting the benefit of 15 projects, you're paying for 11,000 other projects. And we just want people to contact their members of Congress and every November vote and be an informed voter.
Yelchadik, what about the line item veto? That raised its head in the 90s and seems to have gone away again. Could that be part of a solution here for the president?
I think there's going to be a lot of discussion about ways to improve the budget process to make it more accountable. But going back to the question about what citizens can do, it's interesting. There are conservative activists who are very frustrated with this process, especially with the fact that they can't get answers from their own Republican leadership about what they're going to do about the deficits. And I think that citizens cannot ask often enough, we know what's happening when the baby boomers retire. Mm-hmm. What do you, member of Congress, propose doing about this today? That question, every time I've asked it, is kind of met with a quick segue to another answer. It's something that members of Congress don't want to deal with. The more they're asked publicly, I think the more likely they're going to be to deal with it responsibly.
So they don't think they can just sort of wave the shiny trinket of today's pork barrel spending in front of their constituencies and have the big questions be forgotten.
You don't want them to have retired onto a K Street lobbying job when the crunch comes, with everyone else saying, I wasn't there when they made these decisions.
Jack, when things are headed toward a crunch, the pressure, the temperature just rises all the way around. Things get difficult, but habits don't necessarily change on the timetable of the crunch. Here we are, baby boomers beginning to retire now, pork barrel spending going right on, and the deficits.
Habits don't change. I mean, the week after September 11th, Tom DeLay, the leader in the House, tried to accelerate tax cuts for businesses. He was saying, well, there's an emergency. We have to cut taxes for businesses. It was, in other words, business as usual plus. No, I mean, even during the war, it's distressing. That is World War II. It's distressing to see how Congress carried on just as if there were no war on at all. I mean, occasionally the president would have to veto a bill, but often Roosevelt just had to go along with it because he needed his bills through. It's a system that resists accountability on the one hand, and on the other panders, as Gail said, to the local, you know, the person that wants the dam, the bridge, and so on. But apropos the line item veto, here is Lord Bryce a century ago, 100 years ago, saying, "Recently the president has urged upon Congress the desirability of amending the federal constitution to give him a line item veto," 100 years ago.
One century and counting. We won't hold our breath, but the spending goes on. Jack, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
And David Williams at Citizens Against Government Waste, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Gail Chadwick, you are always so generous with your time and such a terrific reporter. We're grateful to have you. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Glad to be here.
Gail Chadwick, she covers Congress for the Christian Science Monitor. You can continue this conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org and click on forums. In a moment, the president of the NAACP says goodbye. This is On Point. Saying he needs a break from public service, the president of the NAACP, Kwesi Mfume, announced today that he's stepping down as leader of the nation's largest civil rights organization. 9 years ago, the former congressman inherited an organization tarnished by scandal and riddled with debt. At a press conference today, Mfume reflected on his nine-year journey at the helm of the NAACP.
9 years ago, we found ourselves as an organization oftentimes waylaid by the paralysis of analysis. Some thought that we had lost our way, and in the process, they thought that we had lost our will. Today, we are, at the very least, the nation's largest activist organization, alive, aggressive, and vocal. We are on the ground in 48 states across this great nation, actively petitioning local and state governments for the redress of our grievances. 9 years ago, we had, in that reality, only two attorneys on our entire staff and too many court cases begging for attention. Today, our legal team is not only much, much, much larger, they are also much, much more effective. The court cases that we have won against so many different issues, the cases we won against the state of Florida and seven counties in that state for election irregularities in the presidential election of 2000, the case we won against Cracker Barrel for workforce discrimination, or the judgment we won against the city of Daytona Beach for violations of public accommodations, and the case that we won against Adams Mark and so many others, speak to the fact that we really have come a long, long way.
NAACP President Kwesi Mfume announcing his resignation earlier today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.